SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, too, stevebick.com. And midweek, there's lots to talk about, obviously, and plenty of news and excitement building toward Derby Oaks and all that. But yesterday, after we got off the air, I think, I'm not sure when it when the bulletin started to come, I think fairly early in the afternoon, news came that via press release from Coolmore and Ashford, the Giants Causeway had died the previous day. And they haven't heard the specifics. They said a brief illness, you'd guess something, you know, colicky and I don't know. There's whatever. It doesn't matter. We'll find out eventually. But the news really, it really kind of shook people up. It's interesting too, because given that he mostly, you know, most of his campaign up until the Breeders' Cup attempt on the main, you know, the career was in Europe. And it's interesting. I saw one of the quotes that came from Michael Tabor that, in retrospect, they might have campaigned him entirely in North America. I think they knew. I mean, given his pedigree, you know, that he was going to be effective, and not just effective, but super effective and competitive on the main track. But he certainly crafted an enviable and, to some degree, legendary record when it came to, you know, what he built as a 2 and 3 year old. And it's really, we'll let Sid Fernando tell you how, you know, how important a passing this is, you know, in terms of his, you know, his stud career. He was a success instantly, and he stood his first year in Ireland at Coolmore, and then came to North America. And there's, you know, there's obviously a harmony going on right now to Giants Causeway's legacy. And that's Mendelsohn. I mean, there's a real, you know, distinct connection to what's being fashioned with him and his pedigree, and what, frankly, what'll seemingly will be an heir apparent. I mean, different bloodlines and so forth. But it there's a lot to compare, and I'll let Sid riff on this because he'll do it real justice, and I'm sure that our conversation will morph from Giants Causeway and his impact internationally. I mean, you can't, it's unbelievable actually when you kind of knew this about him. But when you see it in print and listed in terms of the champions, literally everywhere there's racing, virtually everywhere, Australasia, South America, North America, throughout Europe, every single place, every kind of surface, Giants Causeway impacted with champions. and an outlandish, just, and you know, there'll be two more crops, obviously, three, and who knows where, you know, it all finally ends up. He, you know, he's also, even though he was 21 and had been at stud, I think, what, 14 years? 14? What's the, how many years at stud? Or crops. The growing impact for him as a broodmare sire as well. That'll continue to morph and grow. And then there's his sons that are all over the place at stud. And I said the conversation would probably morph into a discussion of my boy Jack, who's a son of Creative Cause, a son of Giants Causeway. So a lot to absorb when you look at that. That when it's funny, when you look at the list, and maybe one guy that I can even add into this conversation would be Bo Lane. You look at Carpe Diem, his stud career getting going. Giant Oaks was cut short. Escondorea, that's an interesting name and an interesting question. You know, Escondorea is, it seems like he was exported way early, but you know, First Samurai, Brody's Cause just getting going as well, and so many more. And then, of course, on the international scene, Giants Causeway, another big loss, because he certainly had. Yeah, you would think at the age of 21, you would think he, you know, certainly would have stood, you know, barring any fertility issues, another, you know, two, three years. Sad. But the people that have, you know, I know Andy Serling sent out a bunch of video links and, you know, the stirring 'Tis Now Giants Causeway finish in the classic. I actually watched it again this morning too, and you forget how well Albert the Great ran, who withstood the pressure for a good long time before he starts to, you know, back up a little bit, and 'Tis Now starts to pull away, but Giants Causeway was on him in 2 seconds. So to some degree, that, as much as it's fun to watch what Giants Causeway was doing and how it contributed to his appeal in North America, you also realize that 'Tis Now wasn't going to let him by under any circumstance. They could have kept going. They could have gone another half mile, and Giants Causeway wasn't getting by. And it also, you know, for 'Tis Now, you see him battling Albert the Great, and then no sooner does he put away Albert the Great, he's got to deal with Giants Causeway on his inside first and then outside. So it's fun. It's fun to watch those. But you also, when you look at the Giants Causeway performances as well, and who he mixed it up with himself on his way to that date at Churchill, and it's pretty impressive, because he dispatched the likes of Kalanisi and all kinds of, you know, top Euro types that, you know, were his contemporaries. Dan Seeley too. I mean, he had a unique look, that wacky, that unusual blaze. You know, he's had all kinds of interesting markings, just a striking horse, and a lot of people were moved and motivated yesterday to say how much they enjoyed him as a racehorse and his progeny on the racetrack. So Giants Causeway. We'll talk more about it with Sid when he joins us. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. Another nice Saturday for Hill and Dale. Looking at Midnight Loot, Progeny, High North. Midnight Loot is on fire. So we'll talk to Sid in a little bit. And we've got a busy first hour, too. After the first break, we had to table our visit with Jeremy Plonk yesterday. Got very busy, and between the fun Randy Moss visit on his way out of town here and his explanation of the figure-making involved for Magnum Moon at Arkansas, as well as the revelation, we knew the story about the water running down the stretch at Oakland. We didn't realize that it was John White who noticed it first from high above the racetrack that on his first visit to Oakland. That was a piece of news. So that was fun to get the Randy, and of course Shug. I mean, Shug. Whenever we get those visits with Shug to talk about, you know, the horses that he's had in his care. It's a lot of fun. So we got busy yesterday and we didn't get to Jeremy. I felt bad. So countdown to the crown with JP. We'll start us off. Pete Fornatale. We were with Pete at Oaklawn. He was having a great time. So we'll do some more appreciation of Oaklawn and Hot Springs with Pete, as well as catch up the Grade 1 gamble results. John Goodman hosting contest players, and I'd been in contact with both Tony Montanino and North Carolina Tony and Nick Tamaro during the weekend. They were both competing. And they both actually had Tony had a nice run, and kind of Sunday flirted with a run. Nick too. Nick had, you know, some moments of success. So we'll get there's another Canadian. I'm just going to hint it. I'm not going to give the specific results, but yet another Canadian has won a big contest. It's unbelievable. Ray Arsenault and Chris Littlemore and the invasion of the Canadian contest players. So we'll talk to Pete. Bill Gallo is going to visit. We're going to catch up on the NSA scene. A couple of different venues. And it is timber season, actually, the timber racing going on. But they'll be at Middleburg on Saturday. And the Grade 2 Temple, Guathme. And they've got a nice field for it. So we haven't talked since opening weekend. We're a few weeks behind. I also got to get you the Grand National. And I didn't get a chance yet out of the busy weekend. Didn't get a chance yet to talk about Winx, 25 straight. And as I mentioned, the Grand National, of course, on Saturday at Aintree as well. So we got all that. I also want to get, I haven't finalized or gone through the complete Saturday action at Keeneland, including, you know, the Chad Brown import. Speaking of my boy Jack, my boy Charlie, daughter, sister Charlie, that the Jenny Wiley, and there was the Giants Causeway itself, the stake named for Giants Causeway, where Joe Sharp, the Triple Chelsea's always competitive. Glad I included her. Some nice pick five results on Saturday. Keeneland, I was at Oaklawn, but Oaklawn kind of, because of Magnum Moon, kind of chalky. But at Keeneland, there were some nice numbers to be had, actually, Saturday. And really the first, you know, really, I'm glad I looked. There's some good racing today at Keeneland. And in New York, too, we got two-year-olds starting to come out in New York. First runner for Central Banker. Best of luck as his career gets started for Joe McMahon and McMahon of Saratoga. And the Central Bankers look like they're going to run. We're going to run. We'll come back with horse player now. Countdown to the Crown, Jeremy Plonk, Seth Merrill later, and more at the races. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Taking you inside the sport of kings.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right here, right now, right here, right now.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races. Wanted to get right to Jeremy Plonk. Jeremy's got a busy morning, and with Keeneland running, of course, and the sundry responsibilities, and we didn't get to him late yesterday. So Jeremy Plonk joins us. Countdown to the Crown.com or horseplayernow.com, however you want to get to it. Invaluable. And the prep season, Jeremy, is behind us.
Yeah, it's a rearview mirror now. All we have to do is look forward to Louisville, see how many miles we have to get there, and get ready for the first Saturday of May. It's a busy time. We're spending the morning working on the Express Bet wagering guide and getting all the stats and info put together on that. So looking forward to having that out shortly, too, and a quick turnaround with you and others taking part. So there is no shortage of work to do, but this is why we do it. It's a fun time.
Now, some thoughts as we come out of Oaklawn and Lexington, and it ended up being very valuable, certainly for my boy Jack, but it also seems like it was a good adjustment by Churchill in terms of adding a little extra boost point-wise to the Lexington.
Yeah, you know what? They've been criticized over the years for kind of the point system and taking over and hijacking the Derby Trail, but I got to say, I think they've done the right thing on almost all calls. Maybe it took an extra year or two to get around to pushing up a few other prep races and such. But if you were going to make the Lexington really a truly last-stop valuable race, it had to be more than 10 points. And I think they did the right thing there. You know, they brought down the total of some other races. All in all, I think they've adjusted the point system pretty well. And look, the right horses are there. We're not getting a lot of crazy garbage in the race or speed horses that don't belong there going a mile and a quarter as much anymore. And it's become a more formal Derby. So I think that was a positive move. And look, the right horse won the Lexington. In fact, the top four wagering choices ran 1, 2, 3, 4. And I want to make a point about that, Steve, because it didn't happen just in that race. The top five wagering choices went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the Arkansas Derby. And we saw this time and time and time again on the trail this year. Not only are we seeing a run of favorites, I mean, favorites have won 7 of the last 8 major point preps. Enticed losing the wood and running a good second is the only favorite to be beaten in a major prep in the last 8. Not only are we seeing the favorite deliver, but all of the horses in the race that were expected to run well ran their races. I mean, go back and look at the charts. You are going to be amazed. Go out and look at the charts of almost every one of these Derby preps. They're all single-digit horses running 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have looked at the past performances of the 20 horses, glancing down through them. I have to put some historical context to this, but this may be the first Derby in history where all 20 starters exit a race in which they were single-digit odds. There wasn't a single horse over 8 or 9 to 1 in the final preps that made it to the Kentucky Derby. Even Promises Fulfilled was a 7 to 1 shot in the Florida Derby. These were all horses that were expected to run well and got there. You know, maybe Promises Fulfilled, Bravazo ran bad races and they're still getting there, but they ran good races before that to be respected. Every single horse in the top 20 was single-digit odds in their last prep race before the Derby. I'm going to go back and do some research on that between now and the next couple of weeks, but I'm going to venture to say that has never happened.
That's a good point. And as a result, you end up with a field, and I know some people feel that it's devoid of the charm of a horse to be affectionate about, whether it's a nice story or, you know, something. We lost, frankly, you know, one of the nice stories in 86-year-old Joe Peacock with the injury to Runaway Ghost. But I would think, and I made this argument, I think, on Sunday when this topic raised its head, don't you want the horses from the crop that, as much as you can, that were bred and most cut out to be classic, you know, the classic contenders? I think you want this.
I do too. I think we kind of missed the point in the wagering with the Kentucky Derby, in that the Derby doesn't bring you value in the win pool. So if we're looking at the Kentucky Derby and saying, you know, favorites have won 5 in a row, now it's not the great betting race it used to be. Look, Always Dreaming paid $11 last year, $10.80, whatever it was. You know, I can find you a $10.80 horse every single day of the week at Mahoning Valley or Delaware Park in the summer. You know, $10.80 horses are 20 a day around the United States. So, you know, okay, maybe you got a little more price on your horse in the Derby than you would have in another race because of the 20-horse field. But where the 20-horse field really matters is the exotics. And in the exotics, even with the favorites winning the Kentucky Derby, it doesn't impact the exotics any drastic measure. You still cashed out a huge score in last year's Derby Superfecta. If you catch the tries in the Kentucky Derby, you can still hit a bomb. There's going to be a price in there, second, third, fourth, more than likely one price, and that's all you need. You need to find the one price horse. And if you're betting the Derby from a, this is a once-a-year situation, it's the tries and supers that makes it a once-a-year situation, not necessarily the wind pool, not necessarily the Oaks Derby double. I mean, yeah, you get some field size to work with in a daily double pool, but it doesn't exponentially make a daily double a career maker. A try and super in the Kentucky Derby can be a career maker for your wagering and kind of be that one wager that you remember for the rest of your life. It may not put you up for the rest of your life, but it's going to be the one you remember, and that's why I call it a career maker, and that's what you get out of the Kentucky Derby. So, interestingly, you know, the trifecta was the second most popular wager. Johnny D and I were going through the stats this morning. In last year's Kentucky Derby pools, other than the win pool, the trifecta was the second most bet wager in the Kentucky Derby. And so a lot of people are jumping in there, more than exactas, more than supers, more than the pick five. The tri pool in the Derby is exceptionally large, and it entices a lot of people in. And when you get that 20 by 19 by 18 factor in figuring out how many combinations can win the Kentucky Derby in terms of a trifecta, that's what makes betting that race so special. 20 times 19 times 18, because that's what you were working with in the trifecta for the Derby.
Well, and you would think that in recent years, the 50-cent increment contributes to that as well.
Yeah, and that does bring people into the mix of wanting to give it a shot. There's no question about that. And look, I'm not big on 50-cent wagers on a daily basis. You know, I think a 50-cent trifecta on a daily card is kind of cut into prices, and it's cut into my trifecta play. I don't play trifectas on a daily basis like I used to. It used to be my go-to wager. I don't think the returns are strong enough now with the 50-cent wager. Enough combinations are getting covered. The prices have come down. But I understand that it's for smaller bettors and things like that, so I'm okay with it. I don't have an issue with that. But I don't think you have that same problem in the Kentucky Derby, because the 20 times 19 times 18 is so exceptionally different that even the 50-cent increment, it doesn't bring it down that much to make it a wager that you want to try to avoid now. Derby tries are still a great play.
Well, when it comes to the storylines and making the evaluations that are going to be necessary, Jeremy, wrap up the final strokes and the last few horses that
confirmed things. I guess we are waiting for a quip decision from Windstar. But meanwhile, Magnum Moon follows up, justifies performance at Santa Anita. There had been a potential for the two upstarts to meet. They delayed that confrontation until Churchill. Some thoughts about Magnum Moon, potentially quip. Solomini chugged along, got himself locked in, combatant waiting on the outside at 21. And Steve Asmussen brought up the very relatable point that looking at Lee didn't look like he was getting in until until minutes, hours before the entries were taken, and he ultimately finished second. So we're keeping an eye on that. Some final strokes about the way the field came together. My boy Jack and the rest from Saturday.
So my boy Jack earned his way in. You know, I mean, he came from far back, he had a mile and a 16th, the short stretch run at Keeneland, really cornered nicely coming off the turn. He had such a good head of steam, and the way he cornered under Kent the Stormo, and Kent, masterful ride from the outside post.
Yep.
Field of 10. He wore the 12 cloth, but he broke from the 10 hole with a couple scratches. But the way he was able to angle that horse going into the clubhouse turn and save all the ground, then get outside and avoid any kind of conflict. Pony Up and John Velasquez, they moved at the same time from the back of the pack, but Pony Up had to stop on the inside about 3 furlongs out, and he lost at least 5 or 6 lengths from the 3 furlong marker to the quarter pole on My Boy Jack because they went wide. You know, they gave away ground loss to keep momentum, and it worked out in this case because he was on the best horse. And boy, what a really good ride by DeSormo. And I just love the way that horse cornered coming off the quarter pole. If you watch that, there's no drifting or anything like that. I mean, he was razor sharp. Didn't ask him for anything at all in the gallop out. He almost pulled up past the wire. And sometimes you might look at that and say, oh, you know, geez, I'd like to see a horse gallop out a lot better than that at a mile and 16th. But I think this was a situation where they were there strictly to get to the wire and get to the point. You know, I think they knew exactly what they had to do with this horse. And I think as soon as they hit the wire, Kent said, you've done enough. And certainly fitness is not going to be an issue with My Boy Jack, where you think, boy, I wish he galloped out an extra 1/8 of a mile after this race. I mean, he's had, what, 10, 11 starts? He's one of the deepest, if not the deepest resume of any horse in this year's Derby. He's got 10 starts. He's got a handful of them already this year. So he didn't need to do much past the wire, and he didn't. But I think that was by design. He is really becoming kind of my exotic horse. And I think a lot of people will be looking for a closer because you have so many quality speed horses and front-running types in this year's Derby. And those kind of horses win the Derby over the last 4 or 5 years. It's been a cut-and-paste trip, make no mistake. California Chrome through Nyquist, through last year with Always Dreaming, look at their running lines. They look almost identical in the Kentucky Derby. That is the winning trip. So a horse like My Boy Jack probably doesn't win the Derby with that style anymore. But in this year's Derby, where there are so many good, pressing, speed-type horses, you got to figure that a closer gets in there somewhere, and My Boy Jack is looking to me like the closer in the crop.
Well, the pace scenario, people already starting to draw up, you know, some conclusions, and Magnum Moon talked to Todd Pletcher on Monday. Magnum Moon, his win, people kind of picking it apart a little bit in terms of him getting out down the stretch. He did it to a lesser extent in the Rebel as well. You know, still lightly raced. He does have one extra race when compared to the resume of Justify. And some thoughts about maybe not just Magnum Moon, but the pecking order of the Todd squad.
Well, Magnum Moon reminds me so much of Curlin. Now, don't listen to that and say, my God, Curlin's one of the all-time greats and earned $10 million. And don't take it from the end of the career backwards and rewind Curlin when you hear that statement. Take it from the front of the career, where Curlin debuted on Super Bowl Sunday at Gulfstream Park in a maiden sprint race, went on to win the Rebel and the Arkansas Derby while having almost these identical same issues. Go back and watch Curlin. I mean, we remember the great Curlin. The Curlin in early 2007 was raw. He was doing a lot of the same stuff that we're seeing with Magnum Moon. I mean, some people were saying, oh, he's running so fast coming off the turn that he can't keep himself hemmed in. I mean, doing this column for 13 years, I kind of have the experience of going back and, like, what was written 10 years ago about Curlin at this time and things like that. A lot of the same type of things. And so I'm not saying he's going to turn out to have the career of Curlin, but if you match up resume right now, and what they've done and how they actually visually look on the track when they're winning these races and the exact same races and the same front pack, he's a lot like Kierlin. Kierlin ran a damn good third in the Derby in street sense his year in 2007, which a lot of people think is one of the best crops in the last 20 years, which I happen to believe. Kierlin, hard spun, you know, you had the filly in there, rags to riches. You know, a fantastic street sense, obviously. You know, Kierlin was third in the Derby, won the Preakness, ran second in the Belmont. That's a lot to live up to. But Magnum Moon right now does not look very far off Kierlin. If you like him, there is some historical context to think he can be a major factor in this year's Triple Crown. He's not just a dismissive, oh, I don't like the Apollo curse horses, I've got to throw him out. I mean, if you like Kierlin back in 2007, then I think you kind of look at this horse with a little bit more optimism, at least. And then you know, give him a fair handicap and shake now. Do you like him as much as the other horses? Do you think his numbers match up? All that other stuff. Does he get a good draw? But you at least look at him with an optimistic handicapping eye saying, we've seen this before, and it kind of worked with Kierlin. Kierlin had a damn good Triple Crown placing in all three races, winning the middle one. Magnum Moon is not, he's not exceptionally far off that path right now.
Well, and when you think you mentioned the 2007 Derby and that crop, people may forget there were some horses further down the Derby chart and during the spring season, one including by the name of Scat Daddy that is also part of that. So when people talk
any
about
any given 07, Saturday, that was a really good year for horses. Yeah,
Teufelsberg. Really Teufelsberg was a credible went on to get and continues. I mean, he's resumed his career actually as a stallion after some issues. Now that was the exceptional and continues to produce going forward. Put the four Pletcher horses. I know what your thoughts were having looked at Friday's report, countdown to the crown, you had them listed as audible as at the top of your 20 with Magnum Moon third, Vino Rosso seventh, and Noble Indy 10th. They still stacking up that way from your perspective, the four top Pletcher
runners?
It's
a coin flip between the top two. I mean, like, I like the fact that Audible ran as a two-year-old, not because it takes care of the stats, because that means he was in training a longer time and has more foundation underneath him, a little more race experience. But at the same time, then you look at Magnum Moon and you say, you know, look, he ran at three different, vastly different racetracks this year, right? Gulfstream to Tampa to Oaklawn. These are not three similar surfaces and had success in all three. So while he may not have the two-year-old foundation and as much maybe in the bottom, he's got a little more versatility. And I think he's probably a little more brilliant than Audible. Those two are just like inches apart. I mean, they really are. And I would think post position and price will determine which one of those two I would prefer. Looking at it right now, I mean, to me, they're an even match. I don't separate Audible and Magnum Moon by a whole lot right now. There's something to like about both of them. If one of them were to draw the 1, 2, 19, 20, then it would make it a lot easier to pick the other one, you know, that kind of thing. And if the public gets all over Magnum Moon because he's undefeated, people like undefeated horses in the Derby. Let's not kid ourselves. That is a big factor. Let's say Magnum Moon is 4 points lower on the tote board. One is 6-1 and the other one's 10-1. And, you know, you get 10-1 on Audible or something like that. I don't think you will, but, you know, what do people do with Mendelsohn? That's going to be the key to everybody's price. You know Justify's going to get bet. We know that. How much does Mendelsohn get bet in the win pool? That's going to be the key to a lot of those other Todd horses, you know? Where do they go from there? I mean, if Mendelsohn's kind of cold on the board, then Todd's going to have a clear second choice with one of his horses, probably. If Mendelsohn's hot on the board, Todd's probably going to have like the third, fourth, fifth choices, and then you're looking at horses that are, what, 6, 7, 8-1 and up. Todd's horses can be very playable. I think this is his strongest hand that he's brought to the Derby that I can think of. He's had some years where he's had five, but these four are all really good. I mean, pedigree-wise, Noble Indy might be the more mile-and-a-quarter-ish type horse than any of them. He's not as brilliant, but if you look at his resume and the kind of way he runs and his style, he reminds you a lot of Super Saver, and that was Todd's first Derby winner. The other horses remind you a little more of Always Dreaming, right? Audible and Magnum Moon kind of have the brilliance of Always Dreaming, whereas Vino Rosso and and Todd's fourth horse, I'm drawing a blank right now.
Audible.
The top two remind me a lot more of Always Dreaming. Noble Indy is the other horse I'm thinking of. Noble Indy and Vino Rosso remind me a little more of Super Saver, where not brilliantly fast, kind of horses that can maintain a good mid-pack style, pound it out, and if they get a perfect trip and a great ride and everything works out for them, they can be in the mix. I really do think Todd doesn't have a weak horse among those four, and I can kind of draw some lines to where he's been successful in the Derby in the past with these kind of horses, so he's going to be tough. It is so hard to get past the top four or five in this crop. I mean, and favorites have done so well in the Derby, historically well, better than in a century. So I kind of look at this as one of those main players is winning the thing, and it's our job as handicappers to figure out where you're going to get the price underneath them. And it still can be a $2,000 trifecta, $5,000 trifecta, $50,000, $100,000 superfecta, even with something fairly logical winning the thing. But what a great crop. This is a fun group. Look, favorites are winning. Horses that are expected to run well are running well every step of the way. We got a little sidetracked like January, February with some of these early races where there were a couple upsets early, but most of the main players either hadn't emerged yet or were still waiting to come back. We hadn't seen Good Magic yet. We hadn't seen Bolt Doro yet. We really didn't know who Justify Magnum Moon were at that time. The couple horses that were upsetting some of those January, February prep aren't who we're talking about anymore, because March on, this has been run to form. This is a good group that separated itself from the rest.
Very much, and we've got some short strokes, and we hope that everybody stays healthy, and it gets to be harrowing, and I'm sure disappointing when you think you're going, and at the last minute there's an issue, and
right.
Even Ron Lombardi with Firenze Fire, who for about 2 hours thought he was sitting on the outside, and then no sooner had he been pushed outside, he was drawn back in with Firenze Fire.
And I'll throw a bomb because we're talking about the fringe right now.
Yep.
Blended Citizen for Doug O'Neill.
Yeah.
This horse is the only horse who was finishing best of all in the Jeff Ruby. He was finishing best of all in the Bluegrass. I think he'll run a long ways. We know these kind of horses, they don't win the Derby. I mean, yeah, I know my network won the Derby. But in general, you don't bet horses like that to win the Derby. But if you're looking for that horse at 40-1 who's going to run third or fourth or something like that to get on your ticket, Blended Citizen right now is sitting there at about 23, 24, depending on how
22.
Many athletes and horses stay 22. In the mix.
22.
If he gets in the field, he's a consideration on your ticket.
Well, and what happens is, as well, just like it did with Looking at Lee last year, the horses that are sitting on the outside that then do get in at the last minute, everybody's looking at these fields and looking at the horses they're most familiar with, and a horse that gets in late is sort of an afterthought. And I included him in the Bluegrass, and I thought that there was some things to like about him, and I did see the note at first. Doug O'Neill had taken him out of consideration, but then he was put back in. And the news that Snapper Sinclair, for those of you that are scoreboard watching, as Jay Privman says, Snapper Sinclair is either going to run on the grass in the American turf or on the main in the Pat Day Mile. So he was sitting 22nd. Blended Citizen gets back in to the picture, and now he's behind Combatant as the next horse. So he would need two defections to get in, Combatant one.
And quick, Steve, because it sounds like we're throwing a lot of stuff against the wall and hope that we sound smart in 3 weeks, and then we can come back and go, see, we told you Blended Citizen. But to put this in some context, if you like one of Todd's horses, you like Justify, you play that horse on top. If you like Blended Citizen and My Boy Jack, the two closers that we're talking about could be potential price closers here, one by two by all in the trifecta. That means there's 18 horses left to run third. It's 36 combinations. That's an $18 ticket for 50 cents. So we're only talking about an $18 try ticket here where you could have all. So now you get the stupid crazy bomb, right? You're right on the winner. Look, this looks like a pretty logical year. Take the one you have a conviction for and put that horse on top. You don't put the crazy horse on top. You take the horse you have the most conviction for. Now you take the two closers that you think are the potential players in this crop. You put them second. You put everybody else third. That's $18 on a 50-cent ticket. Then you turn around and say, I want to make sure if my closers run third, I have. So you take the single horse, you like Justify. Then you take All In second, and you take our two good logical closers in third that we like, and it's another $18. For $36, you have a potential to hit the Derby based on your opinion. You're not just spreading stupidly. You have a horse that's logical on top. You have your two good solid closing opinions that you think can get a piece. And then you allow the stupidity to happen in the wagering world by having the All. If it's another logical horse, you're not going to get a world life-changing score, probably. If it is another crazy horse, if it, you know, if it's Battle of Midway from last year, if it's Commanding Curve or Golden Soul who gets in there with your horses, look at this. Now I've got Audible at 5-1, 6-1. I've got 30-1 in second because I took the All Ball, and my good closer, Blended Citizen, runs third at 40-1. All of a sudden, I'm looking at 5-1, 30-1, 40-1, and I have just now made my career-defining score as a handicapper. This is the Derby I'll remember forever. And you did it not spitballing, but actually being very focused, and for a cheap amount of money, $36.
Yeah, absolutely, and that'll be a big part of the discussion. We have it with Johnny D, who, of course, goes after the superfecta.
Will Schwartz. He's throwing another leg in there. He's going down the super train. But for me, I'll be playing the tri. But yeah, Johnny, he'll put on the Superman cape for sure.
Well, and he does a 7-horse box typically, and we'll get his perspective and Eddie Olchek and the Express Bet Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown race wagering guides. We'll certainly enjoy all the information that's provided. Got updates that come Derby week, and should also
John White and Jeff Siegel, Millie Ball, Dick Girardi, Bob Neumeier, yourself, Eddie contributes to the updates, Johnny. A really fun team to work with and a respected team to work with on that wager guide for ExpressBet. That'll be ready the Friday before. So before the draw even comes out, you can start to look at the early opinions, and then gets updated, of course, after the draw comes out later in the week. So that's going to be not too far off now. We're looking at probably
not at all.
Next Friday,
27th.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. And Jeremy, also, you should update everybody on Countdown to the Crown and Horse Player Now, and what goes on between now and Derby.
Well, we've got the Countdown to the Crown will continue for the next couple of weeks. We'll have a preview of the big race at Laurel this weekend, you know, towards the Tessio, towards the Preakness, and we'll review some of the other races. Next week for Countdown to the Crown will be my favorite column of the year, the historical comparables. We'll look at all 2025 major contenders and who they match up with historically. We talked a little bit about it with Magnum Moon and how his resume mirrors Curlin. We match every horse up with somebody in history in the Derby to kind of give you a sense of here's how their resumes look, here are the similarities and how those horses perform. So we've got a lot cooking there. And Derby week, we'll get together with an impromptu handicapping seminar during the night school time slot on a Tuesday night there after the draw of Derby week. So be sure to check that out, and we'll bring some people in to help handicap the races for you. And check all that stuff out. Busy time. We still got 2 more weeks to go at Keeneland. Really looking forward to that. And podcast today with Kate and Bradart. Check us out at noon Eastern at Keeneland's live racing page. We'll preview the card starting at noon today.
Outstanding. Jeremy, I appreciate it. Jeremy Plonk, everybody. CountdownToTheCrown.com, HorsePlayerNow.com, and Buzz Report for Derby weekend as well. We should throw that out there. And you'll be starting soon with Countdown to the Queen's Plate.
Brian Netto is going to handle the Queen's Plate stuff this year, and that will come out this Friday. Yes, we're just a couple days away. Countdown to the Queen's Plate, because opening weekend at Woodbine coming up. So we'll get all set for that, too. We have no borders.
No,
literally.
doctors without borders and handicappers without borders. I love it.
We need to change that. Yeah, that needs to be our mantra from now on.
Jeremy Plonk, everybody. JP, I appreciate it, and
hey,
we will talk next couple of weeks leading into Derby. Jeremy Plonk, let's take a break. We'll come back. Get to Pete Fornatel, looms boldly. He's ready. We'll go to Brooklyn. He's home for at least for a little bit. And, of course, it continues to move toward the taping of the pilot for the show that they're crafting out themselves, he and
Jonathan Kinchin and more. Looking forward to updates on that front and everything else that went on from a contest perspective. Grade one gamble at Keeneland. We'll talk about that as well. And our weekend at Oaklawn. Got to spend a few minutes over on the infield side. Pete was hanging out by Marshall Graham's 10-strike racing tent party. It was a good day for them. They ran a couple. They had a couple of competitive horses run on Saturday, 10-strike. But they also had the winner at Aqueduct that I mentioned yesterday with Andy, that Black Stetson in the Bridgetown, in the turf sprint. Pete Fornatel next. Sid Fernando coming up. And not only obviously, we're going to talk about Giants Causeway. I see that Judmont, a few hours ago this morning, announced that Dan Seeley is going to be retired as a stallion, too. So, a contemporary of Giants Causeways. Back after this, though, with Pete.
The latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.